is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. Thank you so much. So listen, I am pre-recording this show. Why? Because, and clearly you're not in the loop, but today is the day for my Seed and Roots Summit 2025, Faith, Family, and the Future of Work. I am over at Independence Visitor Center overlooking Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, and I am in a room that should be sold out. As of today, as I'm speaking with you, we have 9 seats remaining. I'm so excited. You guys, just so much support helping me get the word out. So I'm over there, but I wanted to give you a little bit of a heads up. So by the time you're listening to this, you still have time to get up, run, get over there. You still haven't missed everything. It's still very early. So get on over there right now. But for the rest of you, let me just say, we're going to be having some challenging conversations today. I have been to CPAC for years. I've been to Turning Point. I've been to Trump rallies. You name it. If it's a conservative kind of outlet, I am there. Even if it's not so conservative, I am there, right? And we all, you know, and it feels good. It's like a little cheerleading. They're speaking to the choir. And so everyone is like, rah, 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 right? And everyone is, you know, beating their chest and talking about when I get into position, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. But what is the reality? Now, apart from Donald Trump is actually, you know, promises made, promises kept. He is doing a great job. He's not perfect, but he is doing an amazing job. So bravo, it's a very challenging job. But place Donald Trump into a category by himself. The rest of the people, it is real trying, right? And so we have to do better. But in order to do better, my thought was, instead of waiting for someone else to do better, why don't I just do better? Instead of waiting for someone else to have these real conversations, instead of just rah, rah, yay, kick your feet up, hang out. Instead of me waiting for someone to pivot and start having meaningful conversations, my thought is, why don't I just start having those conversations? And that has given, or like that was the courage behind me stepping out in a very big way and putting on this summit. And I'm very grateful that so many of you saw the value in that vision and have come alongside. So I'm so grateful. Whew, there's so much going on. So I just want to kind of double click on the first panel that I'm going to be talking about today. And that is the politics of respectability. What we've lost and how do we return? And there are 3 premises, but the first premise is that our collective history as Black and white Americans has been weaponized against us. Our collective history is being weaponized. Let me explain. Because slavery happened, because Jim Crow law, segregation, and everything in between happened to Black people, primarily at the hands of white people here in America, Today, we do not celebrate the progress we've made, because I am not a slave. I have never been told to get to the back of the bus. I have never been bred as a business strategy and my children sold to the highest bidder. That actually happened. So we're not going to sugarcoat that actually happened in this country. I do not believe when I've gone into the bank and asked for a loan for personal reasons, for business reasons, I've secured those loans. So I have not been redlined or black coated or any of that, right? We have to celebrate that. This country is not perfect, but let me tell you a country we do not celebrate for making progress. That's China. Ain't nobody celebrating China for progress. Ain't nobody celebrating North Korea for progress. No one's celebrating Iran, Turkey, the overwhelming majority of the world. We're not celebrating them and singing their praises and giving testimonies about how much progress they've made over human history. However, in America, we should be celebrating that, but we're not. And we're not because our history has been weaponized against us. And it forces us not to celebrate any good, but to just talk about people as if slavery was yesterday. It wasn't. How can I say this? Black American history in America has become a form of currency, money. And that currency is being spent recklessly in our country. And it is being spent by opportunists, grifters, who do not care about Black people and or even less interested in America. What they see is a money bag. What they see is power. And they and their motto is by any means necessary. If I have to exploit you, if I have to manipulate your emotions and your thinking, if I have to keep you in constant rage, I'm willing to do it because me, myself, and I want what I want. And some of you may be saying, oh my gosh, she's talking about Black people again. It is because I am not stupid. I pay attention and I love America. I love this country. I love the diversity in this country. I know the good, the bad, the downright despicable things that happen in this country. And I still stand and say, this is the greatest country that has ever existed. But our country is hurting. Our country is broken. Our country is being bruised and manipulated. And here is the truth for those of you who are rolling your eyes. Don't you flip that channel. For those of you who are rolling your eyes, like, oh my gosh, you're talking about Black people, Black fatigue. Listen, Black Americans and white Americans specifically, our fate is tied together. You and I are on the same boat. And if my side of the boat goes down, guess what? Your side of the boat is going to go down too. I said this back in 2019 that a lot of people, I live in the suburbs and a lot of people in the suburbs are like, oh, well, that stuff just happening in the Black community over there in the inner city. They didn't say Black community, but they would say inner city. That's not going to happen over here. And I warned them. What is happening in those inner cities are going to spill out and start impacting the suburbs. And I did not lie. Okay. See you on the other side.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. I am Kathy Barnett, and right now I am pre-recording this show because I am at my first of what I am hoping to become mini Seed and Roots Summit 2025, Faith, Family, and the Future of Work in America. Faith, Family, Work. Faith, Family, Work. Those three simple tools are what I used to claw my way from under a rock. Most of you know my story. I grew up very impoverished. I grew up below the bottom rung of the economic ladder. I didn't even start on the last rung. I was below the bottom rung. I grew up on a pig farm in a one-stop sign town in a home with no insulation, no running water, outhouse in the back, well on the side. When I say poor, we were po. We couldn't even afford the other O. We were just po. And yet, faith, believing that there's something bigger than myself, that I am responsible to live with a sense of agency, with a sense of discipline, with a sense of earnestness and honesty and how I interact with other people. Faith. Something, someone is bigger than myself. Maybe I need to figure that out. family. There's nothing more important than family, as irritating as family can be. And you know what I mean. But there is nothing bigger. What an amazing institution that I believe God created. One man, one woman coming together and saying, we will tether ourselves together in through this journey of life, and we will raise a family, and we will share with them what was shared with us. The family is where you build character. So if we're looking at a nation with very little character and it's all about me, myself, and I can't blame the school. I can't blame the government. I gotta look at my home. I gotta look at my own home and say, because this is where character and virtue and everything good originates. So faith, family, work. I'm grateful. I am swamped right now, but I'm happy. Work gives dignity. It gives purpose. I'm not just, mindlessly moving through life, but I'm building and I'm creating. And honestly, guys, those were the three foundational tools that allowed me to begin to see myself a little bit different than my environment would have told me I was, right? And it's so interesting as I pivot and talk about there was a book that I was just reading about Black Baptist women between 1880 to 1920. I'm going to read some of these stats off to you guys in a few moments. But these particular women, there was a huge migration of Black people off slave plantations during that time. Emancipation happened 1863. So this book is looking at the history of 1880 through 1920. And so you see this huge migration from slave plantations of Black people migrating to Philadelphia, to Michigan, to Chicago. And then later on in the 20s, you see Black people migrating from Jim Crow South and segregated South and continuing to move up here, up north. But up north, you had very established Black families. And they're looking at all of these Black people migrating from slave plantations with a slave plantation mentality, with a slave plantation behavior and attitude and vocabulary. And now they're walking up here into the North, and the Black people here in the North, it was like, wait a minute now. We have worked too long and too hard to carve out a place for ourselves. And their strategy was not, well, let me go to Uncle Sam and tell and get Uncle Sam to do something with these Black people who are migrating from slave plantations and Jim Crow South. Instead, what they did, they said, I am my brother's keeper. We're going to have to come alongside these Black people who are coming up here from the South, and we're going to have to teach them. One of the slogans of the Black women up here in Philadelphia specifically was fight racism with protest, but fight it also with a bar of soap. Yeah. Fight racism by combing your hair. Fight racism by brushing your teeth. Fight racism by putting on appropriate clothing. Google Black people up here in the North in the 20s, in the 30s, in the 40s. I mean, we were sharp, right? The way we dressed, the way our children dressed. And I remember this even on that pig farm. If we walked off that pig farm to go to, our town, it was like, it wasn't a town, but it wasn't the pig farm. So if we were going to leave that little pig farm and go to the grocery store where there's mixed company of white people there, you best believe our hair was combed. You best believe we had on our Sunday best. We knew how to behave. You walk out, you better act like you got some sense. So even then, even in the South, I remember that. Now, I did not know that there was a term for it. The term is politics of respectability. Why not just respect and not politics? Because Black people coming out of slavery, coming out of Jim Crow laws and segregated South, they looked at the respectability not only as having self-respect first and foremost and giving respect to other people, but they looked at respect as a strategy. It was the original resistance. Today, we have resistance like No King, stupid, protest, you know, petitions, you know, all of that kind of stuff, right? But the original resistance within the Black community was be respectful. Respect yourself by not walking out here wearing any old thing with your pants hanging down, down below your behind. Don't walk out here. Fathers, be a father to your own home. Don't go out here like a rolling stone having babies on top of babies with multiple women. No. In fact, let me read some of these statistics. In 1940, 87% of Blacks lived below poverty. 5% engaged in non-manual work, meaning they were all like, you know, manual labor. But in 20 short years, poverty rate fell to 47%. So it went from 87% to 47%. Before 1965, Blacks were moving toward parity with whites. Now, after 1965, the parity between white people and Black people began to slow and then eventually just stop. What happened after 1965? Oh, I know. White liberals started to help us. Before the 1963 Civil Rights Bill, white people didn't really care about Black. You know, listen, you're free. Go live your best life. Leave us alone. Then 1965, you know, white people started feeling, I guess, a little guilty. And then they started saying, you know what? Maybe we can help these people. Now they want to help us. And and you see it in a chart. It is astounding to see the parity that Black people were having with white people. We were approaching parity until Lyndon B. Johnson and other white, mainly Democrats, liberals wanted to help us. Let me also tell you this. Let me just read off these in my last remaining moments here. In a U.S. census from 1890 to 1940, Black marriage, Black people were getting married at a higher rate than white people. This is between a U.S. census from 1890 to 1940. Blacks were getting married at a greater rate than white people until 1960. A 2012 census report on marriage noted that Black men were more likely to be married than white men. Until 1960, something happened in the 60s, but before the 60s, Black men were more likely than white men to be married. Two out of three Black children had two-parent households. Two out of three. So what is that? 63% of Black children had two parents in the home after the 60s, and white people coming up with all these, you know, white Democrats coming up with all these programs like welfare, food stamps, and all of that. Until the 60s, before the 60s, more Black children had two-parent households. Count me down so I don't go over. But in New York, between 1905 and 1925, 3% of Black women were the head of households under 30. 3%. Today is more like 93% of Black women are the head of households. But between 1905 and 1925, 3% of Black women were head of household under 30. Okay, you're listening to the Kathy Barnett Show. I'm over there looking at the Liberty Bell probably right about now. You should be too. Go to KathyBarnett.com. Find out what I'm doing. See you.
This is Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Okay, so politics of respectability. You're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. In case you did not know, you're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show on the number one talk radio station in Pennsylvania. I'm going to just say Pennsylvania. I know we say Philadelphia because that's what the Nielsen rating says, but it's the largest one in all of Pennsylvania, as well as covering most of the Mid-Atlantic states. So hello, everyone. Go to KathyBarnett.com. Find out what I'm doing. My radio show is being picked up by Salem Radio Network starting November 1st. So I'm going to be a little bit of everywhere. What? But today I am pre-recording. Well, this recording that you're hearing is pre-recorded because today I'm overlooking the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia at my first summit, Seed and Roots Summit 2025, Faith, Family, and the Future of Work in America. It is the first of many, and I will be kicking off the first panel discussion on the politics of respectability, what we've lost, and how do we return? Because we're not living through a season of respect. Today is the politics of disrespect. Be as disrespectful as you possibly can. Be intimidating, be aggressive, be in people's face. That's the new form of resistance, specifically in the Black community. But I see your little white kids out there doing it too, right? You say something to someone, what, huh? You know, everybody got an attitude. But the politics of respectability, it was the original resistance movement. Be respectful. Respect yourself. And respect was a strategy that Black people used to gain. We were approaching parity with white Americans in this country. If you look at the number of doctors and lawyers and accountants and teachers, we were growing like 200, 300, 400% every single year. The intact family, 2 out of 3 kids were being raised in a 2-parent household in the Black community. Today, all of these numbers are the inverse. What happened? You could start looking at the 60s, but what happened, right? And how do we get back to that? And it's going to take real conversation because right now, the history of this nation that includes slavery. Now, the history of this nation is varied. It has a lot of different highs and lows and things in between. But the only one we want to talk about is the portion about slavery. And we don't talk about it from the perspective of progress or testimony. Let me share these wonderful stories of how people overcame and built something amazing in this country. Instead, we only talk about the poor, poor, you know, people. Me being one of them. And the history has been weaponized. And the history is being used on everything. And none of it has anything to do with race. None of it has anything to do with the color of my skin or the color of your skin, right? If, for example, if you disagreed with open borders, if you disagreed with 20 million illegals walking into our country, you're racist. It's not because you're concerned or because you want to know who these people are and why they're coming here and do they have jobs and how they're going to take care. No, it's not because of that. It's just because you're a racist. That's how they're using Black history, American history, because it didn't just happen to Black people, but American history. Turning it into a weapon to shut up anyone who disagrees with agendas that have nothing to do with color, that has nothing to do with race. What does open borders have to do with the color of my skin? Absolutely nothing, right? Here's another example. If you disagree with a grown man in a dress walking behind your 9-year-old daughter into a restroom, hey, you are racist. Now, what does that have to do with the color of my skin? Doesn't matter. We've weaponized your history so that we can accomplish our agenda. And if you don't like it, you must be a racist. It's kind of like how we use Hitler, right? If you see something, you don't like it. Wow, that's what Hitler was, you know, you start labeling people, you start canceling people, and you effectively shut down communication. So to my white conservative patriot friends who may be rolling their eyes like, oh, I don't want to talk about black people. Black people, why do we always have to talk about? Listen, because it's being used. Our history, my history, your history, our American history is being used as a weapon, and it's effective. Because I know a lot of y'all who didn't say anything when you should have been saying something. A lot of you allowed people to walk into your little kids' school and teach your little kids that they're inferior, or to teach your little kids that they're evil, because 100 years ago, someone who had your same complexion owned slaves. Now, you didn't own slaves. You don't own slaves today. But someone who looked like you owned slaves. So therefore, you're evil. A lot of you allowed people to do that. It would have been a cold day in hell before someone would have gone in that school and told my kids that, right? I mean, there's videos of me at the school board going off on people. You're not going to teach my black kids that somehow our brown skin has made us victims. I'm not walking around here thinking I'm inferior to you because you're white. No. I used to tell white liberal women all the time, the reason why you hate me is because I don't need you. I don't need anything from you. I don't need a job. I don't need a pat on the head. I don't need you to pay my bills. What I need is for you to stop trying to help me. And I know that because I've done the hard work of understanding the history of our country, not just my country, not just your country, but our country. And there are a lot of people who will have you guys, the new strategy, and it's a strategy, is to get you to believe you're fatigued of black people, to get you to believe, oh my God, black people. No, it's a strategy. They want you to be dismissive. They want you to behave like a racist. They want you to get irritated. They don't want you to keep having conversation. Charlie Kirk was brilliant at this. I don't care if you like him, you don't like him. I don't care. He was brilliant at the understanding that when conversation stops, violence begins. You can't get tired of talking. Because once you're tired of talking, and then you force everyone else to be tired of talking, and now no one is talking, but everybody is thinking and feeling and being pressed and squeezed, and life isn't going the way we want it to go, what happens then? There's a reason why our founding fathers, the First Amendment has five rights. Most people don't know that, but the First Amendment has five rights. I'm going to just talk about the first two. The First Amendment is freedom of religion. Now, that is not freedom to be a Baptist, or freedom to be a Methodist, or freedom to be a Muslim, or freedom to be Hindu. No. Freedom of religion, that word religion, really means conscious. Freedom of conscience. You get to freely live according to your conscience, and not the conscience of the king. Remember, we broke away from the king. Back then, we could not live according to when we were under a dictatorship, under a king. We did not live our lives according to our conscience. We lived according to the conscience of the king, what the king wanted, what the king believed, what the king did, what the king wanted. It wasn't about what you want. And so our founding fathers said the first rule we're going to implement here is, Kathy, you get to live according to your conscience, not Trump's, not Biden's, not Obama's, not the Bush's, not the Clintons, not Reagan. You get to live according to what you believe to be true. Now, for me, I believe God is real. And because I believe God is real, my conscience moves through a sense of accountability in how I live my life. I live my life, my conscience lives its life based on what would God say? Does God approve of this? But then the founding father said, you know what? It's not enough to just believe what you believe. you have to have the ability to speak your belief out loud. That's the second right. Freedom of religion is the first, but then freedom of speech is the second. Because I don't get to just think my own thoughts. I get to think my thoughts and say them out loud, whether you like them or not, whether you feel, you know, some kind of way. You do not have the right to live completely free of insult. No, that's not how this works. You don't get to walk through life completely free from feeling some kind of way because somebody disagrees with you. You're listening to the Kathy Barnett Show. I'll see you on the other side.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
You are listening to the Kathy Barnett Show. I am your host, Kathy Barnett. Woo! This has been so much fun talking to you guys. Okay, at this point, you have probably missed about an hour's worth of me standing up inside of the Independence Visitor Center overlooking Liberty Bell. You probably just missed an hour. We still got 7 more hours to go. So come. I have breakfast for you. I have lunch for you. Just show up and you can register at the door or you can go to kathybarnett.com. You can actually donate. If you can't come, but you just want to support, Seed and Roots Initiative is a 501c3 organization, tax deductible. So you get to make a contribution. Please do, because I think this is the conversation, a conversation we have had over this past hour, the conversation we should all be having. But we're not, because the algorithms do not incentivize this kind of conversation. You have to be completely untethered and undeterred in order to have this kind of conversation, because the algorithms promote and encourages and incentivizes, monetarily incentivizes conversations about, aren't you tired of Black people? Look at those old white women out there doing, you know, they're the ones who's, you know, I mean, no king. All I saw were a bunch of old white women or young white women with nose rings. And okay, I got to talk about this. Every time I see someone with a nose ring, and these are the people who probably think like I'm free and I, you know, I get to just live according to what I feel. Like, do they even understand what a nose ring was for? It was placed in the animals of some of the more unruly animals, the bulls, big, unruly, onerous, mean-spirited animals. And the way they would control them is by putting a ring in their nose. That's very sensitive right there. That's a sensitive part of the body. I put a ring in your nose. And now if I want you to turn your head left, I would just tug on that ring. And guess what you're going to do? You're going to turn your head left. If I want you to turn your head right, guess what you're going to do? You ain't going to argue with me. You're not going to have a conversation with me. You're going to turn your head to the right. It's a sign of being a slave. You got these young white, mostly white women. I see some Black girls too. I'm like, oh my God, so stupid. Read a book. But oh my goodness, a lot of these issues could be resolved if we just made reading cool again. Can we get Justin Timberlake to do a song on bringing reading back? Make it sexy again. Make reading sexy. Oh my gosh. And let me tell you, and some of the people I talk to who have the loudest mouths and some of the most, the loudest opinions are some of the dumbest people. Haven't read a book. It's all about how I feel, what I think, what I believe. And I love it. I love having conversations with people like that. It's a little unfair, granted, but I love it. Because I get to educate with a smile and they don't even know what's happening. But it's so very necessary that we begin to have these levels of conversations. I'm having this conversation today overlooking Liberty Bell in the Independence Visitor Center at the first of many to come Seed and Roots Summits, Faith, Family, and the Future of Work in America, because all of it is changing. Work is changing. I have an AI expert who's going to be standing up talking about it. AI. AI is something. Let me tell y'all something. For the first time in human history, we've created something, a tool that takes humanity out of the loop. Yeah. AI, many AI can recreate themselves. They don't need you. They don't need us. And they're smarter than us for the first time, right? When we did the printing press, when we made vehicles, when we made, different machineries, it needed humanity to press the button, to plug it in, right? For the first time in human history, we've created something that is smarter than us and that does not really need us. Yeah. I wonder how that's going to work out. We need to understand how work is changing and how not to get left behind. Yeah, I have CEO from Best Buy, as well as a CEO of a very large chemical manufacturing company. They're going to be sitting down talking about what does work look like over the horizon and how do we make sure little Johnny, little Kayla, little Carl do not get left behind, right? So we're going to talk about that. We also have some formidable asset management CEOs, CIOs who are coming and talking about Bitcoin and S&P and the stock market and what do you need to do? What is talking about the fourth turning? Have y'all read that book? You need to. It's kind of thick, but it is interesting. And we are living in, drumroll, the fourth turning. What does that mean? You need to know this. You need to know this. And if you think you don't need to know this, you're wrong. I'm just going to tell you that. Get up, go over, and come to the Independence Visitor Center. I am there with hopefully a sold out room. As of today, we are 9 seats away. There's only 9 seats remaining when I counted them up and sent the last head count over. 9 seats remaining. I could not have done that without WPHT, Dawn Stenslin, that whole morning show. Thank you guys so much for talking about this. Sean Farish, I heard you out there. There's a lot of people out there on social media talking about it. Thank you guys so much for talking about it. I truly appreciate it. But let me put a bow on this conversation. I know. The algorithms are telling you guys, black fatigue. Listen, I'm just as tired of these gray hair white women as well. Can we come up with a word for that for that level of fatigue? These old baby boomers who are out here thinking this is they're reliving Woodstock, but on my dime, and they're radically. And now these people have a lot of money. They didn't have any money in Woodstock. They weren't in political power. But these people are now, they're the CEOs and they're driving a lot of the entities around here. And so they have a lot more money and power, and they're very organized, and they are radically changing the country, right? They're out here talking about free love. That is stupid. How many of them ended up getting herpes and AIDS because of all that free love? We're not trying to go back there. Right? We're not trying to do any of that. So we have to have a different, but you don't see us walking around. You don't see me walking around talking about I'm old white woman fatigue. No, it is a strategy. You don't even really feel that way. You're being told to feel that way. Yes, I see the same videos. I don't know if the videos I see of black people wilding out are real or if it's just a product of the algorithms that are selecting and pushing a particular narrative. I'm going to be talking to Kaizen. I've heard many of you guys know Kaizen. Elon Musk loves Kaizen. He retweets them all the time. Kaizen is wildly popular on Twitter, for example. X, formerly known as Twitter, he's going to be in the room as well talking about media narratives and manipulations. Yeah, these narratives. So I don't know if black people are wilding out any more today than they were 4 years ago. I don't know. 6 years ago. I don't know. I personally don't know any black people who behave like that. And I'm black. I've been black all my life. I know a lot of black people. And I don't personally know any black people. I'm going actually downtown Philadelphia tonight. I'm going to be in a room with a bunch of black and white people because I move in mixed crowds. I don't know any black people who behave like some of the videos we've all seen ad nauseum. But it doesn't even matter because the impression that even I have is that this is on a rise. This is prevalent. And that is the problem. That is how I know this is a strategy. Some of the videos we're watching of black people wilding out are videos 8 years ago. But all of a sudden, they're being presented as if they just happened yesterday. It is a strategy. Now, you can feel how you want to feel. I don't really care. Our country has done so much good and righting so many wrongs. But what we have to realize is that our boats, we're on the same boat, you and I. And if my side of the boat goes down, your side of the boat is going to go down too. Yeah. And unless you have your head in the sand, they have effectively used the word racism to force us to accept stupid policies, stupid ideas, stupid attitudes, stupid values that have nothing to do with race. These are opportunists who have created a very powerful weapon in their hand. And they're using that weapon to get what they want. Do you think we would have men taking showers with little girls if it wasn't for these opportunists using the word racism to shut up all conversations? No. You don't get to open borders and most of you watching millions of people just walk into your country without first recognizing that there were people in position, I call them opportunists, grifters, who used the history, not just black history, this is American history. They used American history to shut up dissent, to get their way. And now these boogers are hell-bent on staying in place. You have been listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. I am your host, Kathy Barnett. Go to kathybarnett.com. Find me on Twitter. Donate even if you want. Blessings. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.